Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Money Matters. Welcome to the 256th edition, entitled Falling in the Fall. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative to Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Cambridge, its staff, members, or underwriters. And how is everybody today? Thursday, August 17th, 2017, year of our Lord, 12:10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You may be listening to the show at a different time, but that's okay. Market indices given today may not be accurate at the time if you listen to this show other than when it's broadcast live. But that's okay. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Now, doesn't it? Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another. It controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, or lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. Okay, so, well, the big news of the day, Dow down close to 200, sitting at 21,833. And our continuing coverage of the markets starts every show explaining the resistance and support levels of large numbers. Today, specifically about the Dow, sitting at 21,883 as I speak. So the next resistance level will be 22,000. Now, there are many small ones that technicians look at, but the big ones, pretty much everybody agrees, they call them resistance. In other words, kind of tough to pop through 22,000 and on to the 23,000s and onward. And, of course, the support level would be 21,000 below us. That's support, so it'd be hard to punch down through 21,000, so say some technicians who follow these things. Now, there are a lot of small technical support levels beneath us and technical resistance levels above, but those large numbers, 20,000, 21,000, 22,000, are generally regarded as good support levels. Crude oil is up about 29 cents today, $47.07 a barrel. Tensions, obviously, geopolitical tensions, global tensions, some terrorism. And, of course, the ongoing fiasco with the President of the United States. This is not a jab against him or a jab for him, but there is ongoing, you know, that guy's a wild card for sure. Holy macro. There was also some sort of drive van attack, apparently an alleged terrorism attack where a van drove down three or four blocks of a very populated sidewalk in a tourist area in Spain, if I have my facts right. And so that also is upsetting the markets for sure. 193 is 0.9%. Is that a lot? Yeah, you know, it is. I didn't compare it to the 700, 800, 900 point drop we saw during the crisis, or the 30% or so drop we saw in 1987, 30%. If that was to happen, that means the Dow would drop about 7,000 points. Whoa. Those of you that are short the market would be partying in the streets. And so, yeah, so there you go. So what's happening? What does it mean? What does it mean? Well, as mentioned on previous shows, about three shows back, and approved by the regulators for me to say this, that we were market positive, going market positive November 9th in our portfolios that we manage for folks, and stayed market positive until about a month ago. And then I started to turn market neutral and market negative again, more market neutral at this point. When I'm market positive, it means I place securities in things that I think will go up, yielding hopefully profits. And when I'm market neutral, I mean that I'm pretty much, doesn't matter which way the market goes, we aim it to be neutral. Never can tell whether portfolios will perform as hoped, but it's what we strive for. When I'm market negative, then of course, then I'm looking for the market to go down to turn profits. And we were actually market negative back in 2015, pretty market negative there. That's a backward-looking statement, of course. So I have to be careful with regulators on that, but I have said that before and they approved it, so we're okay with there. They watch me like a hawk, which is good. You know, you don't want advisors going on the radio telling you to buy this or sell that, or that they know where the market's going to go one way or the other, because nobody knows. Nobody knows, including me, right? Some people are better at telling you where the market may go, and some people are horrendous at it. So I always adhere, at least with what I do, in the first rule from Warren Buffett. First two rules. Rule number one, don't lose money. Rule number two, don't forget rule number one. And losing money is more important than gains. In my opinion, it is. Because if you don't lose money, you're not at least going backwards. You're standing still. I always look at it like if I'm gambling in Reno on a slot machine, and if I'm gambling and I'm in the game, I have a chance to win, right? But if I don't win after 4 hours and I break even, I'm happy because I was actually in the game. So somebody could come to me and say, you know, Mark, this portfolio for the last 2 months has gained nothing. And I'd say, yeah. And he'd say, well, why am I paying you? Well, it gained nothing, but it also didn't lose nothing in this particular fictitious example, which means we were in the game. We had a chance to win, but at least we didn't lose. And that's the main thing. And so that's the most important. Don't lose money. Don't lose money. You know, I'd rather see, if I'm looking at another advisor's portfolio, I'd rather see some client comes to me and says, you know, is this a good advisor or not? And I'd say, well, did you lose any money? And he'd say, no. Did you make any? He would say, no. I said, okay. If you held it for a long period of time through markets up and ups and downs, I kind of like that advisor. He didn't lose any money. Somebody says, I got this advisor and I lost 20% on the last market correction and I gained 20% in the last market increase. That advisor, I myself, in my opinion, would not like that advisor as much, because losing 20% is, you know, that's what, 40 years of working, 20% of 40 years is 8 years of your money down the toilet. That's not why I'm in the market. I'm in the market to potential of gains and try not to lose. And therefore, I'm in the game. I figured it's like gambling in a casino, a slot machine, as far as the money goes. Not as, I don't call investing gambling. Investing is not gambling. You're not gambling is basically relying on random chance and maybe some skill of a player if you're playing poker or something. But gambling is basically random chance. We're investing. We go into the market looking at things and saying, you know, this is a good play here. There's an indication that this company will do well, or this industry will do well, or this geographical area do well, or this security will do well. And so at least we have a chance at making gains. And if we don't lose any, we had the chance of making gains. We were in it to win it, and we were in it, and we didn't lose any money, but we were still in it. So, if I had a chance of putting my money in a CP and earning, you know, percent or half a percent or whatever you earn, and I had a chance of going in the stock market and not making any money but not losing any, I would still be in the market myself. Because at least I didn't lose anything. But however, the market always encompasses risk. If somebody comes to me and says, I don't want to lose any money, then I say, then get out of my office, because the only thing I can give you is CDs, maybe short-term U.S. Treasuries, which still can go down a little bit, or savings accounts. Because that's what you need. You don't need an advisor to do that. And I do have a lot of friends that just stay in the bank. That's all they do for safety. And that's fine. That's fine. But if somebody's concerned about inflation or retiring, you know, they want to be in the market for the chance of gains, they have to accept the possibility of a risk of loss. And that's the name of the game. You can't invest in the stock market without a risk of loss. There are certain option strategies that can get you close. But still, it's all on paper, you know. It's like the difference between, don't know if I can cover exchange-traded notes and exchange-traded funds, so I better stay off of that, and I'll ask them, regulators, about whether I can cover that on the next show. Dow's down 210. We did go market neutral about a month ago. The market had a long historic run. I mean, really, really, really long. And I perceived that some of the leaders in the market were breaking down. And so we just kind of used trailing stops in hopes of keeping any profits we had. A trailing stop is a stop that increases on a position that goes up for you. So I didn't want to give anything back. And I got to, you know, I'll be honest with you. You know, I had a couple of clients saying, you know, why did you liquidate this particular asset last month? And my answer was because I perceive the market to be market neutral to slightly negative right now, and I'm being careful. And we also had some progress in those accounts, and so, you know, I wanted to retain that progress. So there you go. So what's coming up in the future? You know, this is hard to say, you know. Fall is the time. The reason I entitled the show today, Falling into Fall. Fall can be a time where we see market upsets. It's not exclusive. You can't say this is the fall. It's going to have a market upset. You don't know. NASDAQ crash, I think, happened in March. But there have been, you know, studies, and there have been analysts that think, or that may indicate, not prove, there's a difference there, indicate, not prove, that the fall is a time, and historically we've seen some brutal falls. So all these things together I took into consideration and thought, you know, if we've got profits, we should keep those and keep our head down. And so that's where we stand as of day. You know, when we go market positive again, I'll tell you that. Right now we're market neutral. Where do I think the Dow's going? Well, I can't say. Regulators get on top of me for that too. So Dow's going to 30,000, Dow's going to 10,000, right? How do we know? Nobody knows. So I guess the best analysis of whether you're doing well or not is, in my opinion, have you lost any money? Because if you haven't lost any money and you're in the market, you have the potential for gains. But to date, you may not have lost anything. That doesn't mean you can't, okay? But it does mean if the person came to me and said, I haven't lost any money, then to date he hasn't lost any money. And for me, that's sound investment strategies. Because you're still in the game, right? So we'll keep an eye on it. Dow down 214. I can't say it's accelerating. I can say that it is definitely moving in the downward direction. Gold is up a tad today, a little bit today. But some of the gold stocks are down because they are subject to what we call market risk. Market risk. There's a lot of different risks. There's a geopolitical risk. You know, you have a Venezuelan stock, and Venezuela goes crazy and confiscates all private businesses, and your stock goes to zero. That's what we call a geopolitical risk. There's an interest rate risk. Interest rates risks are you hold things that will move in an opposite of an interest rate move, and the interest rate moves, and you hold something that moves opposite of the direction, whichever direction it goes, and you get hit there regardless of the underlying security's validity. And there is general market risk. General market risk says that if you hold securities and the market falls hard, most securities will fall with it. That's an accepted definition of general market risk, where I can tell you that general market risk assumes that if the general market falls hard, most stocks are going with it. And that's general market risk. Whether the stock is good or the stock is bad, general market risk says if the whole stock market gets hammered, the majority of stocks are going down. And I can validate that on my screen today. I'm seeing mostly red. I am seeing some greens. Those are in things that usually move opposite of the market direction. Usually, not always. And I won't say what those are. But usually they move opposite of the market. And indeed, there is some green on my screen. Right? So there you go. So there's green and red. There's more red on the screen because I have more long positions on this screen that I look at. But I do have short positions on there to see how the short people are doing. Short people. Well, who's that? Put that song on. So we'll watch this for you. I don't know. You know, I had a friend of mine. He lies at the opposite side of the political spectrum from me. And we went around and around, and there's some not angry words, but there was some disagreements. And he's a popular guy, and he runs a big website here, public website. And we got in a crossing of swords a couple of years ago, and I said, hey, you know, let's go to breakfast. So here you had one political extreme going against the other political extreme. We had breakfast. We had a great time. He got to listen to my point of views and agreed with some, and I got to listen to his point of views and agreed with some. So we are now making it an annual reach across the table breakfast, and we had our second one. And so he asked me today or yesterday, I didn't understand the question, today I did. He's making a bet with another political extreme on the opposite side of him, a $200 bet, and he wants me to hold the money. He wants me to be the escrow account, not really hold the money, but hold the checks, you know. And I said, sure, you know, I guess he doesn't trust the person he's betting with. But, you know, if I was to bet with somebody with a good amount of money, I would definitely want it in an escrow account or have somebody hold it, because how do you know the guy's going to pay, right? You might say, I'm going to pay, but it might come, push comes to shove, and he doesn't pay you. So it's good to place those big bets, at least in my opinion, in a third party. So anyway, we'll see. He's got a bet that I think the bet was that Trump was going to be kicked out before the end of his term. So there's bet that, you know, that's an ongoing bet, man. I tell you, some bets are where he's going to be kicked out before the end of the year or kicked out before his first year concludes, which would be what, January, close to the end of the year, or just kicked out before his term. But I don't know. You know, we'll see. He does have a mouth on him. You got to give him that. He does have a big mouth, whether you agree with him or don't agree with him. So you're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name is Mark. I really appreciate you tuning in. I love doing the show. I love disseminating the information. I love giving an alternative point of view on what you might see in the regular news media and explaining some of the terms that everybody uses that they don't explain to you. And that's really the main thing. You know, you get on a news channel and they say, well, GDP went up and employment went down, and you know, what does that mean? Nobody really knows what all that means. And so I try to break it down and explain it to you. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. Welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Mark Grimbery. How's everybody today? Dow down 222 now. You know, it's interesting. One of the stocks that is up today is Snap. Yeah, I'm looking at it at 12:29 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. It's up 13 cents. I've seen that with Snap before. It sometimes moves opposite of the market. It's really weird. That doesn't mean it will, but I have seen that in the past. We're in the money. All right. So many people throughout history have uttered memorable quips and one-liners, famous quotes, and infamous indoctrinations. Many of these utterances are well known because they were said during a turning point in history. An example would be, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself," made by FDR during his 1933 inaugural address. Now this, what I'm talking about, goes along with one of the articles I wrote a long time ago. I think I read it on the show, was The Type of Worker. And so I'll give you the link to that if you wanted to read that. And although inspiring quotes can move one to action, or at least move you to thinking of some action, modern-day man, us, seems simply fascinated by a series of words strung together with some sort of poetic beauty, some sort of rhythmic cadence, and a deep meaning to the point where at the time we assign magical qualities to those who sang them. In other words, got a guy who always comes out with some interesting sayings or whatever, and you say, wow, that guy must be pretty smart. I think I'll follow him. Many argue Barack Obama held a talent for elegant speech, as do many politicians, of course. That's why they're there. Where what you say seemingly takes a backseat to how you say it. I knew a newscaster here a long time ago, and he had a great voice. I called him the Razor. I can say his name, Mike Thornton. And Mike Thornton did the news here for years, and he could really just describe a rose blooming, and you would be stuck to the radio because he just said that type of thing. So it doesn't matter what he said, it's how he said it. After all, Obama took the highest office of the land, partly by his command of the English language. I don't think anybody would argue with that. He could speak well. Few would argue that, because how else would a junior U.S. senator could get elected to the highest office of the land without even completing his first term as that U.S. senator? I've had the chance, with my extensive exposure in public media, to coin many one-liners. I have. I'm proud of them. None of them have reached national prominence. And the ones that I've coined are, going in the wrong direction is easy to identify. It feels like you are going nowhere. Another one I did was, if you are wondering where you are going in life, it's likely you are going in the wrong direction. Another one, where you go in life depends a lot on who you hook your cart to. And the first step in making a change in your path for the better is first realizing you are currently on the wrong path. And the hardest part of change is realizing you have to. And one that I did not write, but one that I always loved, if you're wondering who the patsy is in the room, it's probably you. I have a lot of others, but the point I wanted to make is we often, as humans, and I do too, give an inequitable weight to people who come up with things like this on an ongoing basis. If you got somebody who continually comes up with this stuff, we sometimes give more weight to what they say. The art of language mastery, in other words, if you speak well, is often confused with intelligence, confused with business sense, common sense, and what some call being streetwise. In other words, if somebody speaks eloquently, we often think that he's intelligent. The best example of what I'm talking about are often represented in politics, where many of those that are in politics spoke well to get elected to public office. We must not confuse, however, the ability to speak well and develop catchphrases that please with the ability to run a business or a city or administrate a constituency. On the contrary, I often find that those that talk a good game, not being able to live up to their own rhetoric. I've often run into columnists and a lot of people who say they're life coaches, and I'm not knocking life coaches. Just in my experience, I've seen a lot of people that are either columnists, life coaches, or politicians that have found a home and a career advising others what to do. Yet they themselves have spotty resumes a mile long. This isn't a knock on any of those careers. But sometimes I find it's as if they couldn't hold a steady job for long, or there are many business endeavors have failed miserably. I mean, I got a lot of people coming to me trying to give me advice. And I ask a question, give me your history, you know? And I find more often than not, they've had a lot of different jobs, moving a lot of different locations. They had a business for a while, 3 or 4 years, or closed it up, or they just haven't shown me that they have a solid background in employment or solid background in administering their life when they're trying to coach others on how to do theirs. Despite such repeated failures of some of these people, the gift of gab has saved them or has enabled them, so to speak, to continue on in a career advising other people or writing about advising other people. They're able to string together a slick-sounding plan or a mantra or a series of mantras. In the end, they're trying to teach others how to succeed. It's almost like the accomplishment of repeated failures gives them a license to tell others what not to do and what to do and how to do it, all wrapped in slick-sounding lessons or slick-sounding advice. In my many years in business, financial, media, and the rest, I run into countless people trying to sell me their advice. True, I get it all the time. I can usually spot the true experts that I might use from the people that I think that I won't use, that I call in this other article, the fakers. The ones that may be able to assist me with something, in other words, it's like, hey, this guy's a good web guy or this guy's a good business guy. I usually make sure that they held successful and long careers, either in employment, in other words, they've been employed for a long time somewhere, or businesses of their own. They've run businesses that were successful. The fakers, on the other hand, may have a long history of job changes. Well, I did this for a while, I did that for a while, did this for a while, did that for a while. They have no pattern to an employment theme. No pattern to an employment theme. In other words, they're in the same business for a long time. They're in, you know, selling medical devices for 50 years or 40 years. Instead of I sold medical devices and then I opened a vitamin shop and then I was a physical trainer and then, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Some of them have held businesses, but they closed them up. Well, I had a business for 4 years and I closed it up. That, being in contrast to what I look for, did you sell it for a profit? Or whose majority of titles included positions in organizations that might just take you for no cost, or a lot of them I find on the board of directors. I've been on a lot of boards, and I find a lot of these people on the board of directors. You know, board of directors usually is a nonprofit is not paid, and on public offices, I mean on public companies it is paid, but I find a lot of people on some of these boards, they don't have any experience at all, and what experience they do have is just not common sense. Public office politics seems to also be popular among those who make a living advising people on how to do something that they themselves have been unable to do, which is basically make a living for themselves. Sometimes they just go into politics, I think, in my opinion, just because they can't go anywhere else. In conclusion, I know this whole diatribe has a harsh sound to it, as well as indicating that I have a tint of judgment in its weaving of this mantra or this diatribe. But I think the subject is a serious one. Following the advice of those we might admire because of the sole ability to convey a message eloquently can be a dangerous practice. When looking to mentors, leaders, advisors, coaches, make sure they themselves, in whatever they are trying to teach you, have been successful. Being able to talk a good game may sound good, but their words might be nothing more than words, with no successful experience to back them up. Instead, somebody's trying to give you advice, or you're reading about somebody that you think is great, or whatever they're doing. Ask to see their resumes. They should be able to say, here's my resume. What businesses have they successfully run for a long period of time? And I mean, for me, 10 years or more. Have you run a business for 10 years or more? And did you sell it for a profit, or did you just shut it down? What jobs have you held for an extended period of time, 5 years or more? Were you managed to stay employed with bosses who paid you and scrutinized you for more than 5 years? And what concrete evidence do you have of actually being successful, besides sounding like you were? Ignore the fancy sounding titles, and I see this all the time. The fancy sounding titles and abbreviations after their name. You know, John Schmidt, PHRRPSRC, you know. These abbreviations, usually the ones you've likely never heard of, or they're certified by some sort of business or certified by some sort of certification that you've never heard of. It may be the one they own themselves, right? And if you're looking for business or career advice, especially advice on how to run a business, above all, ask them how much they're worth. Because the sole purpose of business, distilled down to the definition of capitalism, is to make a profit. I know that sounds horrible, but that's the measure of a business. It doesn't matter what business you're in. I'm not talking about nonprofits now or businesses that help people. I'm just talking about a guy opens up a business to make money. Business. Because you usually go to people, how do I make my business make money? So you have to ask them, did you have a business and did it make money? And if it made money, their net worth should be up. I knew a guy, I think it was the mid-80s, he was driving a Lexus and he was offering me financial advice. You know, he wanted to charge me for financial advice on how to run my business and stocks and all this stuff. And he didn't have a pot to blank in. He didn't. He was all in debt. He drove the Lexus on in debt. He was dressed nice in clothes he couldn't afford. And, you know, he just didn't have any money. And I just said, hey, you know, this guy doesn't have any money. Why would I want to take advice from him on how to make it? If they won't tell you how much they're worth, or and you find out and they're not worth much themselves, chances are you're talking to a faker. For more on fakers and others you should avoid in the workforce, you can see my previous article entitled The Types of Workers. I've got it on LinkedIn and some other social media that has my name on it. And that's a great article that I wrote. Well, if I could say so myself. Anyway, you're listening to Money Matters and Community Radio Station. The Dow is now down 232. Pacific Standard Time, 1241 on Thursday, August 17th. We'll be right back with more Money Matters. Okay? Okay. Yes, you are. My name's Mark. Welcome to another edition of Money Matters, edition 256, called Falling into Fall. Thank you for joining me on your community radio station, Dow Down 242. I couldn't say comfortably say that seems to be accelerating into the close. What does that mean? Well, last time we had a 200-point drop last week. It went back up next day. So what can I tell you? I've wanted to do this article for a long time, and I want to tell you the question. Do women, the female species, make better VPs? Do women make better VPs? And specifically, I'm talking about chief executive officers, the top dog at a company. It's a tough question to answer, and certainly a hotly debated one. Although the majority of company CEOs are male, there are a number of women steering the rudders of large and small companies alike. And although we don't know for sure how private companies are doing financially, because we're not allowed to see their books, public companies whose stock shares are available to retail investors, public companies, right, like Apple and IBM, those are public, you can trade those. We call those public companies available to retail, that's you, investors, have to publish their financials every quarter. And by looking at these financials, their public knowledge, we can discern whether the woman CEO is measuring up or even surpassing her male counterpart. According to a 2016 survey by Fortune, only 4% of the Fortune 500 company CEOs were women in 2016. 4%. That number actually decreased. For those doing the math, it means that a paltry 21 companies out of, I think, Fortune 500, I think has 501 companies in it, were commandeered by women in 2006. 21 out of 501 companies were commandeered by women in 2016. That was down from 24 women 2 years before. So 2014, there were 24. 2016, there were only 21. 2017, however, is witness to a new record of women-run companies with 29. The caveat here being that women making up 50% of the population, only 6% of notable companies, Fortune 500 companies, are run by them. Of the women heading up or used to head up some of these companies you may have heard of, some notable names and companies appear on the list, some with glowing results and some not so favorable. Meg Whitman, former CEO of Hewlett-Packard. General Motors has Mary Barra steering the ship. PepsiCo's Indra Nooyi, I hope I pronounced that right. Ginny Rometty, headed IBM. Marissa Mayer, she headed Yahoo after graduating and having graduating from Stanford 10 years prior. But these are only a few of the well-known companies with women steering the rudders by holding the CEO wheel. Lockheed, Xerox, Avon can be added to the list. There are more, of course. The obvious question is, do women perform any differently than men when it comes to calling the shots of these behemoths? The sample set, in other words, the representative set of what we can look at, is small. There's such a low percentage of female CEOs that it's hard to discern valid results with such a small sample. But we can crunch any number, right? So we can at least draw some conclusion as to how women have performed in the past when heading up large companies. First, starting by investigating women's intuition and judgment on handling money. Now, this is not heading CEOs, just money. A gender investor comparison study done in the year 2000 by Terrence O'Dean of UC Berkeley and Brad Barber of UC California, entitled Boys Will Be Boys, Gender Overconfidence and Common Stock Investment. This study determined that women investors outperformed men by 1.44% annually. Extrapolating out on that study, in other words, somebody did another study along the same lines. Kristen Orman of Wealthy Retirement compared the performance of S&P companies after women CEOs replaced their male counterparts, and found that the companies went on to outperform the broader markets after the women took control by an average of 104% based on their stock price only. So she only looked at the stock price. Did the stock go up after the woman took control? Women-run companies saw a price increase cumulatively of 170%, while the market only went up 67% during the same measuring period. Although the obvious observation is the sample size is small, 29 women or 24 women out of 500, the results do spawn some questions, at least in me. Are women better managers, CEOs, than men? The obvious question, why aren't more women in the top positions at large public companies? That one my wife answered. She says, well, Mark, it's a male-run world. Are the results of the few studies undertaken, are they conclusive? Why do the statistics we currently have available to date seem to indicate women are indeed superior CEOs based on stock price? So that would raise the question, is stock price performance the only indicator of a successful manager? And is it a valid indicator? Is a stock price a valid indicator of a company's success? In time, the answer to these questions will become clearer as the number of women who are put in CEO positions increase, and with the passage of time. This will allow us a greater sample size to do the math, to give us better statistics, to yield better conclusions. One thing is for certain, the number of women in CEO positions is woefully disproportionate to the number of women in the general population. That certainly leads us to the obvious and most important question, why? You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause
listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. Down 263 with about 6 minutes left on Thursday, August 17th. As I said, you may be listening to this show at a different time. It's carried on 4 or 5 dozen other stations. They pick it up and they play it at different times. So if you're listening to it other than today, which is August 17th, the indices that I'm speaking of may not be true tomorrow or Monday or Thursday, whenever you hear this show. But the material, I've always thought the material that I disseminate on Money Matters, I'd go back to show number one, which I have every show I've done started in 2005. And the material that I talk about outside of the specific adjustments that I make on a specific industry or stock or something like that, outside of that, the material, I listen to it. Sometimes I'll plug up show 4, show 9, show 22 and see what I said. What did I say? And I know that the general gist of when I started the show, and a lot of people say they saw something coming, but, you know, in radio, we keep the shows. I got the shows, so I can, and they're dated and stamped and all that. And I started the show in 2005, I think. I said the housing market was going to crash and the banking system was going to implode. And everybody thought I was a crazy nut. Well, there's two issues there. I'm a crazy nut. True. Totally. Out of my gourd. Was I right? Absolutely. And I, you know, we have the shows to go back and, you know, listen to. When the whole system started to implode, then the show kind of took off, you know, got a lot of interest because, well, the nut was right. Now, I'm not a genius, you know, I'm not a genius. There were a lot of people like me and a lot of people that I read that had influenced me that agreed or that pointed me in that direction that this thing was unsustainable. The way they were going was unsustainable. Nobody could call when it was going to implode. I just said, it's going to implode. And it started in 5 and 6. It took the 2008, the fall, to implode. And it did. And so that's how this whole thing started. So it's difficult to tell you where markets will go. I've been burned many, many times. And anybody who's been in the stock market knows you've been burned. But I have learned a lot of really standard rules, you know, not to chase a stock and, you know, set your buy price and look for macro indicators as well as micro indicators. And but I still adhere by one rule only, man. Don't lose money. Don't lose money. Don't lose money. Over my years of investing, starting when I was a kid, I lost well into six figures. Well into six figures. I think I'm still writing some of those losses off because those were in non-qualified accounts. And in a qualified account, you can't write off stock loss. But you learn as you go along, right? You learn as you go along. And, you know, I learned a lot. And so, but in any case, yeah, the market now is down, what is it? I'm old. I can't see longer than 3 feet. And I put my reading glasses on. I can't see longer than 3 feet. So the screen's 4 feet. 266 with 3 more minutes. So you've been listening to Money Matters Show 256. And really, I just appreciate everybody tuning in to Money Matters, the Economic Forum. You can call in anytime, by the way, 530-265-9555. I'm sorry I didn't give that phone number out earlier. I was remiss in doing that. But you have been listening to Show 256. Our website is moneymanagementradio.com. You can make comments to the program director of the radio station, and they will forward them to me. And be sure to check out the website of your community radio station, what kind of broadcasting is going on there, how you can participate, and other things like events around town. Remember that discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only, or the opinions of any person I may have interviewed, or the articles that I may have read, but I didn't, so that's okay. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. My name's Mark. Go make some money. Money. Get back. Don't